You're listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, where we celebrate women working in animation, illustration, and comics, and discuss female representation behind the scenes and on the screen. A big dreamer from an early age, Angela Ensminger has always been passionate about animation and drawing her sequential heart out in a sketchbook. However, on the journey of growing up, she lost her passion for drawing and took a path into journalism and publishing. Don't worry, she found her way back and is now a production assistant on Nickelodeon's The Loud House, as well as the creator and host of the Animated Journey podcast. This woman is super resourceful and a creative problem solver. If you're at the beginning of your animated journey, this is the perfect episode to gather tools and ideas for how to identify your dream job, studio, types of shows you want to work on, and reverse engineer a path that could help you get there. I'm really excited to share her interview with you guys. This will be a multi-part interview. It was a long journey, and she gives so many great tips and just healthy perspectives on kind of not necessarily getting sidetracked, but getting thrown off your original path and finding your way back. Without further ado, here's our interview.
Especially when you're contributing at such a large platform, because it's like you and me were like, We're just getting our careers started, and it's like, we're contributing, but, like, we don't make creative decisions, and, like, we can say something in a room, but we're not the reason something happens. It's someone else says, that's good, we'll do that.
I made sure that the car had a front three-quarter turn so that the animators had all the assets they needed.
That's good.
That is my job.
Yeah.
Which are, like, it's an important job. I mean, make sure they have what they need.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's this, like, trend going on where, like, we're only going to provide three-quarter front views and, like, back or front. Well, it's a smaller studios, I think.
Oh, wow.
Or, like, if there's, like, quick, if it's, like, an incidental, like, I know on the Disney show I was on, they'd be like, we're just giving them three-quarter front, three-quarter back. They'll figure out the rest. And, like, fair, okay, but if you have time and money, do the other ones. Or, like, if it's seen a lot, like, main characters typically get a full turn so that all the information is there, and so at least that looks good, you know?
I can see that.
But I guess it's a dance.
But I feel like if you have an episode and you have a character that's not a main character, but you see every angle of that character, you should provide the model for every angle of that character so that they know this is exactly what this is what you need. There's no guesswork. You don't have to try to figure out what that's going to look like. You have it. In the long run, that saves time and money rather than them having to contact you and then say, does this look right? Or do you need this? Or they animate it, it comes back, it looks wrong. Then you have to reanimate it. That costs a lot more than if you just give them that turnaround the first time. Definitely. I think it's better just give them what they need the first time so that there's fewer corrections the second time. And so you don't have an 80s cartoon situation where you had, did you ever see, there's an episode of Wander Over Yonder where the main evil guy is watching this movie they made of him being awesome, but it's made in the style of old school 80s cartoons like He-Man, and there are all these weird animation glitches like what we used to watch when we were kids, so the wrong arm is on the character, and the soundtrack goes off, and then their eyes and their mouth get taken off of their face, and they're on the ground instead, and people are running backwards instead of forwards,
and
there's all these weird little animation mistakes that I remember seeing in those cartoons as a kid, and I thought, this is brilliant. You don't want that.
Yeah.
That's expensive. So just get it right the first time around.
Oh, that's so funny. You know, there's, so, like, I've worked on a few shows, so I, like, there's a few philosophies out there, and one of them is, like, because I can kind of see if, like, okay, we're only going to provide them what we think they need and what we hope they can, you know, get the job done with, providing fewer turns and whatever. But then, like, in post, they're like, oh, that didn't look good. Let's provide them extra. But it's like, if they didn't need that extra, then we saved money, you know. But that's such a risk. And I don't know. I always find it interesting what gets funded and what gets greenlit. But I think a lot of, especially outsourced studios, are like, oh, we could do it for cheaper. We can do it for cheaper. But then you end up paying more because, you know, different reasons.
I'm a big advocate of pre-production, but it's because I'm biased because I've only worked in pre-production. Mm-hmm. Not only in animation, but in reality television. I've only done pre-production. Mm-hmm. And having worked in pre-production, and then I have friends who work in post, hearing their stories in post, post has a hard deadline. They mm-hmm. have no wiggle room. So yeah. to me, it seems cruel to not do some of the stuff up front and then go, well, just fix it in post, and go, so you don't like your people in post? You don't want yeah. them to ever see their families or go home? You want them to work 7 days a week? Mm-hmm. Cut them a break. You know, give them what they need ahead of time so they're not looking at this just going, ugh.
I've been having to work in post lately, and it's just like, it's intense. So I really want to use most of that because, like, it was a good conversation, but obviously that's not how we typically start.
We just start talking, and then you just edit it however which way.
Well, we've known each other for a while now, so it's kind of cool that, like, we bring this, like, knowledge to the table right now. So, like, it's really interesting how, like, I mean, you were on the outer rim of animation. You were in the industry, but you were, like, not at a studio, you know, and not doing, like, you're always, like, writing about animation or volunteering or working, like, at these conventions about animation. It was always surrounding the topic. But now you've worked at Nickelodeon for, like, 6 months, almost six
Four
months.
4 months.
4 months.
I've been here 4 months.
As a production assistant. And it's, like, crazy how much detailed information you now have. Because, like, you had so much information before just because you are such a curious person, and you're like, I want to know how this works. And you were, like, studying it for a long time. And now, like, you see it in, like, action. Everything is clicking. All that information I brought to the table and now using. Like, that's so cool that you sound like a producer freaking talking about all this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's so cool. You want to introduce yourself, Angela?
Hi. Hi, Cassie. My name is Angela Ensminger, and I'm a production assistant on The Loud House at Nickelodeon.
Such a great show.
I love our show.
Like, was that your first choice, what you had hoped you would work on?
Yes.
Nice.
But what was really cool was when I was in art school, we had an awesome art director who oversaw the entire 3D department, and we all had another director who oversaw the 2D department. But I had a history of animation class with our art director. His name is Tom Bertino. And he told us in class, he goes, you know, the first couple of shows you guys get on, they're probably not going to be that great because you're just starting out. And he goes, that's what happened with me, because he started off in 80s television animation, which we all know and love, but hearing from people that worked on it, it wasn't so hot and awesome. Mm-hmm. And what he said was, they're going to give you a piece of poo. Poo was not the word he used. This is a family podcast.
Very nice.
He said, we're going to give you this piece of poo. Your job is to shine it up. So it's the shiniest piece of poo that anyone has ever seen, so that they'll look at that and go, wow, if you could do that with this, look at what you could do on a show that's actually good. So when I was in school, I thought, okay, the first show I probably get will most likely be abysmal, but I'm going to do a really, really great job so that I can eventually get to a show that's halfway decent and then get on a show that's awesome. And my first television animation gig is on a show that I already liked. I already liked the show. I already watched the show. I already knew all the characters. So when I got hired on it, I thought, oh, this happens? I didn't know this happened this way. I thought I had to work another 10 years to get on something halfway decent.
That's really cool. Like, what a gift.
I'm really, really thankful.
Yeah. Well, you worked really hard for it.
Thank
so
you.
It's nice that, like, the universe gave it to her.
It's like, hey, look at all the stuff she's been doing and seen. I'm like, thank you so much.
And then lights up on new scene.
Yes.
Right? New chapter. Oh my gosh, that is so cool. And it's a really exciting time in television too, because there's a lot of great shows out there.
Absolutely.
But the top one, your top pick, nice.
One there.
So cool. So, how to get all of Angela into one podcast.
How to condense, like, all of this.
I know. You are, like, one of the most intense people I've ever met. So, like, and I think that's why I connect with you, is because, like, a lot of people are kind of, not that they're simple, they're still complicated people, but, like, they're like, storyboarding is all I ever wanted to do. And, like, that's what you want to do too, and that's what you're here to do, but you come at it from a different angle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like you come at it from, like, a filmmaker perspective, and not just, I want to make boards for other people all my life.
This is true. This is true. And that that took a while. That wasn't actually my, let's see, I wouldn't necessarily say that that was my intention all along, but it's what happened because it took me so long to get into the industry. It developed over time from talking to different people and from volunteering. But I will say, when I was little, I knew I wanted to work in animation because I used to watch animated movies all the time. I mean, all the time. I feel like my parents must have taken me to the movies at least once a week because I made a list once of every movie I remembered watching, and there were over 600 movies on that list.
Wow.
So I feel like they must have taken me there all the time. And also, I was in daycare when I was little, and every Friday we watched a movie, and we watched everything that was PG-13 and under. So I was going to all the Disney movies and all the Don Bluth movies with my parents, but then I was watching Raiders of the Lost Ark and Spaceballs and Wrath of Khan Back to the Future and The NeverEnding Story and Explorers at daycare. And so it was all this wonderful animation and 80s action and science fiction movies just rolled into one thing. But I remember when I was 9, I decided, I want to work in animation. I want to work at Disney, and I want to do what all of those people do, because I used to watch all these shows, and I'd look at the credits, and that's when I realized, oh, there's people. This isn't just some magical thing coming out of a box. There's actual men and women that do this. I could do this. But I noticed that everybody was an old white guy. And I remember as a kid thinking, why is everybody an old white guy? And fortunately, my parents would always buy me all these books about, you know, black people in history, and look what we did, and look what we've accomplished. And so I remember thinking, well, I'll just become the Black Disney. And then when I'm the Black Disney, all the other little black girls and black boys will all be inspired because of what I did. And all the other kids too, but I'll just be Black Disney. I don't think that's a typical thought most 9-year-olds have.
That's a very, like, weighted decision. Like,
I know.
You just, like, pulled the entirety of the world on your shoulders.
And it's funny because as a kid, I didn't think of it that way. I just thought, well, that's just what I'll do. Okay. And it wasn't until I became an adult, started working in the industry, I thought, that's what I thought when I was little. That's amazing and also really heavy for a child.
Mm-hmm.
But it weighed on me because all the shows I liked, it was always like little white kids doing things. And I thought, I want to see somebody that looks like me doing this. So I just started drawing all the time. And I just wanted to know everything about everything. I just want to know everything about animation and then everything about movies and how it was made and what they did and where they went and how they made things. I remember there was a show called Movie Magic. I think it was on the Discovery Channel, and they had an episode where they showed how they did the whales from Star Trek IV.
Oh, thanks.
And I thought they were real whales. And then you see that they're actually these puppets that they made. And I remember thinking, they're puppets? How did they make those puppets? This looks like a real whale. How is that even a puppet? How is that a thing? And just so things like that. And I've noticed just from talking to people and listening to other podcasts too, I feel like pretty much everybody that works in animation or works in television and film or special effects, they were that kid. They were that kid who thought, I don't want to just watch this. I want to make this.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know how to make this. And I want to know who's involved. And I want to find out the names of the directors, the names of the writers, the names of the animators. And I mean, there's a lot more information now that I know people know this now, but, you know, in the 80s, there was no internet. There was none of this stuff. Like, I had no idea. And I grew up in Houston, Texas. Nobody in Houston, Texas that I knew worked in the film industry. No one my parents knew worked in the film industry. I didn't know any animators. I knew that was in California and Korea. I couldn't get to California or Korea. And so whatever you could find, you could find. And if you couldn't find it in the library, you just didn't find it. It just didn't exist. To the point where I remember the way I taught myself how to do cartoons was I used to put the VCR on pause and then draw the characters because I couldn't look them up anywhere. I mean, now you go online and you can find animation and model sheets and character designs and just everything. Then it was like I didn't know what a character design and a model sheet was until I was in my 20s. Like, I'd never seen one until college, I was, like, 22, yeah. You know? So I remember as a kid just being like, well, this is how you do it. You just put the VCR on pause, and you draw it. You watch it, then you put it on pause, and you draw it. And then eventually you'll know how to draw just from putting... It was either putting stuff on pause or getting those Panini sticker books, because the Panini sticker books had stickers of screenshots. Mm-hmm. So I would draw the screenshots or just look at coloring books, and that was it. You know, so it's like, all right, I'll do that. But I feel like the people that had to do that, there's a certain level of, I know this is what I want to do, because it was so hard and grueling to even find anything and do anything and get to that point that you knew, oh, this is it, because I've tried everything else, I've done anything else, this is really hard, this is the only thing I want to be doing, I got to find a way to make it work.
Yeah.
So that's what you did. You found a way to get it to work.
I love how resourceful you were at 9.
Yeah. I was,
like, that's amazing.
Yeah. I give a lot of credit to my parents. My parents were very much, you can do whatever you want to do, and if you don't know how to do something, look it up. Figure it out. Ask somebody. It's not magic. It's not impossible. Just because it's hard doesn't mean it can't work. Like, I remember I would... You know, whenever I used to say, I don't say this anymore, but when I was little, I'd say, oh, I can't. And my mom would look at me and go, don't ever say that. Yes, you can. Go figure it out. You know, or I had to look up a word. I don't know how to spell this word. They're like, well, look it up. How will I know how to spell, you know, look it up if I can't spell it? Figure it out. I'm like, and I used to get really mad. And now I look back and go, they were brilliant. I had brilliant parents. So
locking that away from
my mom. I owe a lot to them. And also, you know, when I got older and decided to, this is getting a little ahead of the story here, but when I decided to go back to school, they didn't think it was weird. They didn't think, why are you, you know, you had this whole other career, why are you quitting this whole other career and making good money to do art? And I have a lot of friends that had really intense arguments and fights with their family over, I want to be an artist. And it, you know, it would have been better if they had told their parents, you know what, I want to be a professional hobo. I want to go ride the rails. They would have gotten the same response. Yeah. And my parents didn't say, why? Why do you want to do cartoons? They looked at me and went, that makes a lot of sense. You should go and do that because you're drawing all the time and you're watching cartoons all the time and you know a lot of information about the stuff that we had no idea even existed, and it will make you happy. So just go. And I remember even talking to my dad about it, because I said, I don't know if this is going to work. And he goes, if you're doing what you love to do, it will work out. He didn't say how it would work out, but he's like, it will work out. And also they told me, as long as you're not living with us when you're 40, you can do whatever you want. And I thought, all right. And I remember they came by a couple of weeks ago, and I gave them a tour, and I took a picture of them, and I looked at my dad, and I said, see, I don't live with you at 40. And he was like, I'm proud of you. Good job.
They give you a bar to measure to. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate in that, because not everybody's family's like that.
Yeah, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask, so that's mm-hmm. really awesome. Mm-hmm. It's so nice that their parenting skills are, like, the best.
Yeah. I think it helps, too, that I was never, like, I tried really hard to not be that kid that, you know, I didn't want to be the deadbeat kid, you know, the stereotypical kid that, like, never left their parents' house and wouldn't do anything and didn't have ambition. Like, I was like, no, I'm going to go out and do something really awesome, mm-hmm. you know, so that helped, too. And the other thing that helped, too, was my first career was in publishing in New York. When you move to New York and you get your own job, and you get your own apartment, and you make your own way, and you call your parents and tell them how you cussed out a person trying to harass you and scared away rats and killed your own mice in your own apartment and got a raise. Like, compared to that, I was like, I beat New York. Now I'm going to art school. They're like, okay. It's like, you're doing fine. Like, you know,
yeah.
We're not concerned about you. You'll be fine.
So is that, like, what you went to school for, publishing?
Yeah, I went to backtrack.
The first time you went to school.
Yeah, the first time. So I'll backtrack a little bit. So I wanted to do animation. And then in high school, I ran out of things to draw. I didn't know what I wanted to draw anymore. And I got into journalism because I was on the newspaper staff. And that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed talking to people and interviewing people and finding out people's stories. And we had a lady from the local news station came and gave a talk. And I got to do a one-day externship where I went to the Houston Chronicle, which is the local paper for Houston. Mm-hmm. And I got to go in the features department and sit down and talk to the editors and look at all the computers and see what they did. So coming out of high school, I thought, oh, I'm going to be a reporter. I'm going to end up, you know, I'm going to win, you know, like a Pulitzer, and I'm going to write all these really in-depth articles. And if any of you have seen BoJack Horseman, like the main woman on BoJack who wants to go and like save the world and write all the stuff, I wanted to be like that. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to be on the evening news and doing all this stuff. And I got to college and I was on the newspaper staff for one semester and in journalism for one semester. And I thought, I don't want to do this, because I was writing obituaries and articles on protests. And I remember thinking, this is not fun. I mean, this is fun for other people. And I have a lot of respect for really solid journalism, especially right now when people are just making crap up and just putting whatever they want, saying, this is a fact. It's like, you made that up. That is not correct. So I have a real, you know, soft spot for like journalistic integrity. But I realized I don't want to do this because I love making stuff up. And when you do that in journalism, you get fired because it's called lying. So yeah. I don't want to. It's like, yeah, I want to make stuff up. So this isn't the route I need to take. I need to find another route. And so I just looked at other majors and I picked communications because it was the most general and I wouldn't have to stay in school for an extra 2 or 3 years. Mm. And I thought about switching to art, but I didn't like the art advisor. I went to the University of Texas at Austin. I didn't like the art advisor all that much. And I was 3 years in and I would have had to have scrapped everything and spent another 3 years in college. And my parents were paying for college. And I thought, I'm not going to do that to my mom and dad. That's the worst thing. That sounds like a really bad teen movie, going to them and saying, hey, guess what? You know those 3 years you just paid for? I'm going to chuck them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take art. They would have been like, no, you're not. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. So I switched to communication and I decided I wanted to work in publishing because my best friend wanted to do publishing. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a fun job. I'll do that too. And so I got an internship at Texas State History Museum doing press releases, and I just started reading a lot of books. And the way that I figured out where the publishing houses were was I took all my favorite books and I looked at the front page to see where the publishing houses were, and they all said London, Sydney, New Zealand, and New York. And I thought, well, I can drive to New York, but getting to these other places is going to be really tough, and I've never left the country, so let's aim for New York, because I think that's a lot more feasible than trying to figure out how to get to Sydney. Mm. After college, I moved back home and stayed with my parents and worked a lot of really terrible restaurant jobs and retail jobs and tip people well. Everyone out there, just tip them well, because those are terrible jobs and people aren't treated right. But I had those jobs for 2 years, and my dad helped me sell my car, and my parents gave me some money, and I went out to New York with my mom, and we found an apartment looking in the newspaper, because this was a little bit before Craigslist was around, but it wasn't really a thing yet.
Because, like, time frame, was this, like, early 2000s? Oh, this was in
2004. Okay. Yeah, so this was in 2004, so I move out to New York, and I found a really nice apartment, actually, out in the Queens, and it was funny because it looked like the neighborhood from Spider-Man 2. So I remember thinking, oh, this is, I love Spider-Man. It's like, this hey! Is familiar. It's like, wait a minute, Spider-Man, you know, Peter Parker lives in Queens, I live in Queens, this is a good sign, you know, this will be great. So I moved there, and then I found a part-time circulation assistant job at a business magazine company through a New York Times advertisement, and I worked there for a year and a half. And then I got an editor job at a place called Vault.com, which I think they still exist. They used to publish books, then they went strictly to digital. I believe they're still around, not sure on that, but they did a bunch of guidebooks for people just getting out of college. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of, so you have a degree in finance, here are the kind of jobs you can have in finance. Here are the kind of jobs you can have in technology. And my job was, we had a spreadsheet of thousands of companies, and my job was to call every single company and ask if they wanted to do a survey. And if they said yes, then I had to send out the survey. Then when they returned the survey, I had to edit the survey, and then we turned it into a book. And we also did interview books with, we did one on like a diversity series of, you know, 50 minorities in law. So I interviewed all minority lawyers. And then we did 50 women lawyers or 50 women in business. So I interviewed all these business women. So that's how I learned how to really interview, was from having to cold call a couple thousand people for about a year and a half. And then that company got bought, and I was tired of living in New York, and I didn't think I'd want to do publishing anymore. And what had happened was, when I moved there, I got involved with the local animation scene, because I still, even though I didn't know what to draw, I still loved cartoons. And so I joined ASIFA and Women in Animation, and I went to all the screenings. And I remember Bill Plimpton had like a Christmas party. So I went to his studio for a Christmas party. Oh, and then so John cool. Canemaker had a party. So I went to his apartment for a party. I went to, like, met all these different people, and they were all really cool. And they all really liked their jobs. And then I'd go to my job, and everyone seemed kind of sad. I mean, they were nice people, but they just didn't seem to really be... Some of them did, but just... The people that I met in publishing didn't really have the type of enthusiasm that all the animation and comic book writers had. Even though a lot of the animators and comic book people weren't getting paid as well, but they seemed happy, and they liked hanging out with each other mm-hmm. after work, which I thought was amazing. And they had all these festivals and screenings, and they do all these live drawings, and they're just a fun group of people. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, they're fun, and they're having fun, and they're creating really cool things. I'd rather do that. That looks a lot more fun. And I'm still watching cartoons all the time. I'm staying up late watching Adult Swim, and I'm coming home from work watching Teen Titans all the time. There's got to be something to this, because this has never really gone away. And I think that's the key. Like, if you like doing something and it's never really gone away, even when all your friends have outgrown it, or it's not considered cool or hip, and this wasn't really necessarily the golden age of animation either. It was just, I mean, there was a lot of cool stuff, like, you know, Samurai Jack was out, and Danny Phantom was out, and Dexter's Lab, and, like, there was a lot of really cool things, but I think a lot of the stuff being made now is really, really awesome. And it wasn't really like that, but I just remember thinking, the people in this industry are fun. The stuff they're creating is fun. They like their jobs. They get to do really cool, fun things. I need to do that. And so I just started asking my friends, what should I do? And so a bunch of them were like, you don't need to go to art school. Just start animating. And I thought, I have no idea how to animate anything. So I got all these books, and I'm like, okay, these books are confusing. And then my friend got me, like, a copy of a copy of a copy of Photoshop 6. Not Photoshop CS6, Photoshop 6. Ooh. Like, this is how long ago. This was, like, super old, you know? I had, like, this old computer and Photoshop 6, and I was, like, scanning stuff in, like, trying to teach myself Photoshop. And I thought, I need to go back to school, because everyone's telling me I don't have to go to school, but I don't know how any of this works. So I thought, okay, I'll go back to school. But I couldn't go right away because I didn't have any money. So I moved to Denver because my family was in Denver and I was tired of being in New York. And I could see, okay, our company just got bought. I don't know if it's going to go in a good direction. I'm not really digging living in New York. And it seems like most of the animation that I want to do anyway is in California. Because New York was a lot of indie stuff that was interesting. But I wanted to work at Disney or Pixar or DreamWorks. And when you say that in New York, I don't know how it is now, but then if you said, I want to work at Disney, they'd look at you like, why? Why do you want to work at Disney? Why don't you want to make your own cool, weird thing that only 10 people will see? And I'm like, because I love Disney, and I love Disney movies. Ah, so I thought, all right, I need to get out of town.
Well, I think so. The more specific you can be about what you mm-hmm. want, the more likelihood you will get there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if that wasn't speaking to you, why mm-hmm. make yourself fit into that mold, yeah. you know? So I think it's really cool how, like, I mean, I'm sure it took a lot longer to identify things. You're like, okay, mm-hmm. I really gravitate towards that and that, and then mm-hmm. piece it together. But I think that is really interesting. Like, do you remember, and you probably still do this in mm-hmm. some form, how you identify those things? I mean, the older you get, the more you get to know yourself and know mm-hmm. what you like. But, like, were there questions you asked yourself? Or, like, how do you, like, tune out the world and ask yourself, what do I want?
That's a great question. at the time, the reason I knew that I wanted to work for the big studios was because the big studios were making the kinds of movies I like to watch. Pay attention to what you spend money on, and pay attention to what you spend the most time doing. I was spending a lot of time watching Teen Titans. I loved Teen Titans. When Teen Titans came out, I remember the first time watching it, and I immediately thought, that is the type of show I want to work on. This looks great. It's an action show. It's a comedy show. It's anime. It's bright colors. It's superheroes. The girls are cool in it. The guys are cool in it. This is cool. I really like this show. And then, you know, Danny Phantom came out, and it was the same thing. I love the voice acting. I love the action. I love the comedy. I love the colors. I love the color styling. Like, there were, whenever Danny was fighting ghosts, it would always turn into this crazy purple hue. And I noticed that, and I didn't used to notice things like that, but I started noticing the color schemes of things, and I started noticing the musical cues. And then you watch enough animation, you start recognizing, oh, these are the same voices and everything too. And so then you go, oh, okay. And then I start thinking back to, okay, well, what did I watch when I was little? And when I was little, I loved action shows, and I loved science fiction and adventure shows. And so, and I loved everything on the Disney Afternoon. So Gargoyles, DuckTales, Darkwing Duck, Gummy Bears, I was all, you know, Goof Troop, I was all in. Like, I loved that, loved it so much. But then I also loved, like, all the Don Bluth stuff. The Don Bluth stuff was really weird and crazy. So, and I remember the first movie I remember seeing when I was a kid was An American Tale. Mm-hmm. And the scene that I remembered from American Tale was at the very end where the mice build that gigantic mouse machine to scare away all the cats. That is a crazy, scary scene. And I remember sitting in the theater looking at this going, this is the most amazing thing I have ever seen. Now, granted, I was five, so the amount of things that I had seen was very limited. Yeah. But I just remember thinking, this is crazy. I love this. And then, you know, flash forward, talking to friends, the scenes that scared them the most in television shows and movies were the scenes I liked the best. Mm-hmm. So stuff like Return to Oz, when Dorothy's talking to Mombi, the queen, and Mombi has all these rows of heads, and they all start screaming. I thought that was awesome.
That was intense.
Yeah, I was just like, there's this woman who can remove her head and put on other heads, and then they all scream. That's awesome. And then you have E.T., this weird, scary-looking alien. He's awesome. And then just all these different things, and so I just started realizing, okay, I'm always watching action shows. I'm always watching adventure shows. I'm always watching these things. I should work on something like that. Okay, where are these things being made? They're all being made in California. I need to move to California. Because with the exception of Blue Sky, which at the time was in White Plains, New York, there weren't any major anime. There were a lot of smaller studios, and they were doing cool things. I don't want to take anything away from them, but they weren't the types of things I wanted to work on. So once I figured out, all right, this is what I like, and this is why I like it, and I've watched a ton of it, and I can quote it, and I know all the directors and writers and everybody on it, they're all here, that's where I should go. And then it just became a matter of, okay, so those are the studios I want to work for. Where did these people go to school? And the way I figured that out was I started looking at what the companies wanted. And I don't even know how I figured out to do that. I just remember thinking, okay, I want to work at Disney. What are they hiring for?
Yeah, because did they have websites at that point?
Yeah, they had, at that time they had sites, but it's funny because the sites now are super advanced and they're like phone trees, you know, they just go to here and they're all these forms. Yeah. Pixar's site used to just be, we're Pixar. Here's what we're looking for. Send us an email. And they had the phone number listed. You could just call them. I didn't have the guts to call them.
Yeah.
But if I think if I had called them, I probably would have gotten a real person. But what I ended up doing was I found, like, for example, I found Pixar's site and I printed out the job description for animator. And I saw, okay, they want someone that knows life drawing and acting and whatnot. And I reverse engineered it. So then I looked at art schools and just looked up, okay, which schools have those classes? So if the school didn't have the class, it didn't matter if it was a school that had a good reputation or whatnot. I'm like, nope, not going to look at it because they don't even offer that class. There's no point. Mm-hmm. So I just started looking up, all right, which schools offer these classes? Okay. Then I started figuring out, all right, which directors do I like? Which writers do I like? Which animators do I like? Which storyboarders do I like? And about this time is when, like, Blogger started getting really popular and IMDb and all this. So you could look up everybody, and then you could start looking up, okay, where did they go to school? So then you start going, all right, well, they went, you know, this person went to CalArts, this person went to RISD, and this person went here, and this person went here. And so that's how I figured out where to apply to school. It was like, I'm going to apply to these different schools and figure out, you know, what their programs are and see if I can talk to a human being. Yeah, so it was kind of reversed, which I think that's a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
Rather than, and I know this is going to be hard for people because school is really expensive, but just because the school is in your town doesn't mean that's the school you should go to. But also, I found this out later, just because someone famous that you like went to that school doesn't mean you should go there either, because that was a different time. And the teachers they had aren't necessarily going to be the teachers that you're going to have. And even if they are, you want to go to a school where they're teaching you not only fundamentals, but what's current. Because I've met a lot of people, not only here at Nickelodeon, but other, you know, studios too, where they learned the fundamentals, which was great, and you need to learn that. But they didn't learn how to get a job because none of their teachers had been working for 10, 15, 20 years, or they're all ex-Disney people, so they knew nothing about television. They didn't know anything about the internet. And so they're teaching them stuff that's, you know, it's useful to know, but that's not going to help you get a job at Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network or Pixar or whatnot, because they're not really teaching them the skills that you need. Both. You need, like, the old school skills, but you also need to know what's current so you can put them together. And I feel like that's a huge chunk that's missing out of four-year formal art education. That, and it's sickeningly expensive.
Yes.
It's like, it's gross. I mean, you could become a doctor for the amount of money we're spending on this.
That's so true. Yeah, that's a very good point. Because, like, all those ex-Disney people, like, that was at a time when Disney kept rolling them on to new movies. They always had something being made, 2D. They needed more people. And, like, now it's definitely more hopping from studio to studio. And, like, that happened back then. But the biggest meal in town was Disney and Warner Brothers, you know? And Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
But, like, their stuff lasted a lot longer, you know? And now there's a lot more studios. Yeah, that is unfortunate about some schools. But I like the concept of taking the old school craft, because that's what it is. It's a craft, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a passion. And then you mix it with the modern networking and, like, doing social media and getting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the, you know, veterans are kind of, like, retiring sooner than they'd like because they just don't know enough people to continue on, you know? Yeah.
And I want to speak to that, but I also want to make sure. Did I answer your question?
Because I forgot my question.
Okay, because I...
So, yes. Like,
I love talking with you, but I want to make sure that I answered your question.
No,
I think your question was just, how do you know what you like and what to gear
yourself I mean, you said reverse engineering. I feel like that...
Mm-hmm.
That's solid. That's how I do everything. You
but
know?
I also think, too, I'm fortunate in that I knew from a young age what I wanted to do. And even though I ended up taking the path of journalism and then going back, it was still an aspect of what I wanted to do. I wanted to tell a story. I just told stories in a different way for about a decade before coming back to visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can be tougher if you don't know when you're a kid, but that's okay because I don't think most people know when they're kids.
Yeah.
Like, very few people know before the age of 10, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Most people figure it out when they're in their 20s and 30s and 40s, and that's okay. And that happened to me too. I mean, I ended up switching, which is fine, but...
Like, did it take you a while to accept that, though? Because I feel like what you're saying, I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
That it took a while to accept it. It was that it took a while to actually get into it because I had to figure out how. Because, you know, the first time around, it was, well, I could switch to art, but I just have to spend another 3 years in school. And my what I'd been doing wouldn't count for anything, and I'd be spending a lot of my parents' money. And I didn't want to spend, you know, I didn't want to waste their money.
Yeah.
So I don't regret that decision. I feel like that was a very mature decision to make. And then when I moved to New York, I thought, well, I'll work in publishing, but I'll get involved with animation just to see if I like it. Because I remember thinking, well, I already have a degree. So let me see if I like it, because I might love it. And if I love it, hey, we're done. If I don't love it, I can always switch, because people switch careers all the time. And so I got into publishing, and I got to where I wanted to go, and I realized, I don't like this. And I thought, well, why don't I, would I like it more if I worked at a different company? Or would I like it more if I was doing fiction instead of nonfiction? And I had to realize, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of publishing it is, even if I was working for, you know, Tor or Random House or like Penguin or like someplace really cool, making really cool, you know, science fiction books I like to read, I still wouldn't be happy. And that just took time. That just took time just to figure it out. And for animation, once I figured out, oh, I want to do animation, then it became, oh, there's more than just animators? Oh, what else is there? Oh, there's character design and storyboard. Okay, what do I want to do? I think I want to do storyboard, but I don't know. 2D animation seems cool. Okay, let's do that. How do you do that? Oh, you have to get these programs. Okay. Oh, you have to read these books. Okay, I don't understand these books. I don't get this program. Should I go to school? All my friends are telling me no. But they all went to school, but they're telling me no, but they're all working. That doesn't make any sense. I should go to school. Okay, I want to go to school. I need money. Okay, I need to get a better job. So for me, it wasn't the hardest part was once I figured it out was, okay, now that I figured it out, how can I pay for it? Mm-hmm. And it eventually ended up just becoming student loans, because that was the only way after 10 years of trying to figure it out and the economy crashing twice. It's like,
yeah,
you know, because I had an opportunity to go to school when I was in, I moved to Colorado. I got a job at the Denver Art Museum. It was a really good job, really awesome team, lovely people. And Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design was 30 minutes away. I had a tour of the college. I met one of the teachers. I met one of the students. He had had an internship at Blue Sky. He was a nice guy. Teacher was nice. The other students were nice. And I remember thinking, okay, I have this great job at the art museum, and then at night I can take these classes, and we're set. And my job will pay for art, and everything will work out great. And then 2008 economic downturn happened, and a huge chunk of the entire adult population lost their jobs, including me and 20 other people at the museum. Because when people lose their job, the last thing we want to do is look at crazy art and go, what does this mean? No, they want to go and feed themselves. And I remember my bosses were so sad, and they took me out to coffee. And they were like, we think you're great. There's nothing we can do. We're really sorry. We'll write you a really nice recommendation. They're like, it's not you, and it's not like we don't have plenty of work, but we can't let you stay because we have no more money. And so that threw a wrench and stuff, and I thought, all right, well, I can't go to art school now because now I'm unemployed and I just got a new apartment. Now I can't pay for it.
Ouch. Adulthood
hurts. Yeah, adulting. Like, the struggle is real. It's like, oh, this really, really sucks. So I ended up working three jobs. I worked at an express. I graded standardized tests, which was terrible. Weird people, and they're not teaching kids right in school. Like, I feel for students because, it's so sad. And then I ended up getting a cashier job at the museum because the museum needed cashiers. So I went from working a really good job to working three jobs. And I wasn't taking any days off. And my parents came to visit. And they asked me, like, a really innocuous question, something along the lines of, how are you doing? And I just broke down in tears because I was so overwhelmed and exhausted because I hadn't had a day off in a couple of weeks.
Oh my gosh.
And I hadn't been sleeping. And they're like, you should sleep. And I'm like, I can't. I have to make this work. And they're like, not if when people ask you questions, you cry. It doesn't work. So
I had a period in my life when I would do that. And I still sometimes do during like really stressful times. Mm-hmm. So that's, it sounds like because you were just trying to make it work, it really seems like you didn't know the value of taking care of yourself.
Oh, no, not at all.
But, like, you also didn't have time. But
no.
Like, even if you knew it, there's no time in your day.
Yeah, there was no concept of, you should exercise, you should sleep, you should, you know, go out with your friends, go out in the sun. No, none of that. It was, I am now an adult, I have an apartment, I have a car, my job is to be an adult and to work really, really hard because everyone in my family works really, really hard and that's what we do. You're an Ensminger, you work hard. And my parents are basically like, yes, you should work hard, but don't die. Because then we would miss you. Yep. So you need to take a step back.
And were you still going to classes and stuff?
Yeah, I had started. I couldn't take classes at, you know, okay, because it was too expensive at that point. So I started taking classes over at a place in Denver, the name of which escapes me now. But you could take life drawing classes.
Oh, nice.
So I started taking life drawing classes. Because I thought, I need to do something, you know. So I was taking life drawing classes and working like 3 crazy jobs, and then those jobs ended because they were all various contracts, and then I got an unemployment check, which really helped.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a tax refund because it turned out I'd been paying my taxes wrong 3 years in a row and the government owed me money, which nice. Never happens. That never happens, and it happened for me, and I was like, I don't even know what to do. The IRS is friendly. This is great. Here's this gift. And then I ended up, my parents retired to Denver. So I moved in with my parents. And they said, you can move in with us because we know you're working hard and we want you to sleep. Please come and live with us and not work 3 jobs and take classes, to their eternal credit. So I moved in with my parents. And I found a contract job that paid well enough where I didn't have to have 3 jobs anymore, just have 1. And then that went to full-time. So I worked as, I did IT tech support.
Mm.
And that's how I learned to do websites, was working at this IT. I worked for Intuit, which is a QuickBooks and TurboTax.
Mm.
And I had to talk to people all the time. So that helped me be able to talk to people in a calm manner. And I learned how Google and internet search engines and search engine optimization and websites works and nice fonts and all of that. So it ended up helping me today, which I didn't think at the time. I thought, this is a paycheck. And now I look back and go, hey, I learned about the internet. That was a really useful skill.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about, like, you know, extensions from your path is, like, it all seems to come back, you know. Mm-hmm. And help you in the future.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, you had, like, so many jobs throughout your life. Like, you will not have a problem getting jobs.
No.
Like,
you know what I mean?
You can talk to anybody.
Now, the thing is it the job that I always want? No. But can I get a job? Yes. Yeah. I can get multiple ones.
And that's valuable.
That is a valuable skill. Yeah. And I say, you know, don't knock it. Because I remember in school and out of school, too. And even when I moved here, I had friends who were like, I only want a job in animation, which I get. I totally get that.
Totally.
I get the, no, I have to be focused. I'm only going to apply for animation jobs. But look, if you can't pay your rent, if you can't afford food, whether you're living with your family or boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife or not, there is no shame in getting a job so that you can subsist. Because it does, first off, it does wonders for your self-esteem just to have some place to go. Even if it's someplace you don't like, there's something about just having to get up and put on a clean shirt and a clean pair of pants and drive somewhere and work somewhere that it makes you focused. If it's a job you like, then you go, hey, at least I have this thrival job that I like. If it's a job you hate, that puts the fire under your butt to get things going. Because yeah. I've had jobs that were, you know, temporary jobs that I really liked. And when I had them, I'd go home and I'd draw a little bit. And it was, I'm like, this is fine, this is nice. And then I've had jobs that I have despised with every fiber of my being. And I tell you what, I would get up early and draw or write, go to work, come home, draw or write, rinse and repeat. It was like, I'm going to get out of this. This is the last thing that I do. And it will inspire you to get out there. And you can also save money, and then you're not a financial burden on people because you're at least contributing something. And it looks better on a resume, too, if you don't have, what did you do between art school and your job? Oh, I did nothing for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't really want a giant. I mean, now it's a little different because of recessions and whatnot. People get it. But at the time that I was doing it, it looked weird when you had this giant gap. So even if it had nothing to do with anything, you could still say, I worked this job. Why were you there? Oh, because, you know, the economy. They'd be like, oh, okay, I understand. Like, I totally get it.
I think it's good just to have an answer.
Yeah, have like, an answer.
So, like, predict what they're going to ask you based off what they're seeing in your resume.
And you never know. Like, I learned I can talk to anybody now. I didn't used to be able to do that. I can do that because every day, you know, when I worked in IT, I'd get 40 to 80 calls a day from people that were very upset because they're not making thousands of dollars from their website on Google because they don't understand that's not how the internet works.
Yeah.
So I had to talk people down and explain, you know, you would think that, oh, I just have to explain how your website works. No, I had to explain, okay, here's how the internet works. Here's how Google works. Here's how domain works. Here's how search engine optimization works. Like, basic stuff. You have to go through it. You do that every day for a year and a half. It's like, oh, you need me to talk to that person? Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not scary anymore because you just have to talk to people all the time. So you learn skills that you didn't even know were skills that you wouldn't have gotten if you hadn't been working some of these weird and random jobs. And then you know, hey, I can do anything. And you also know, too, because that's the thing they don't teach you in school, is that shows end, animation jobs end, features end, and you don't necessarily roll on, like what you said, to the next show. They didn't tell us that in school. I didn't find that out until friends that were ahead of me started getting jobs, and they'd be like, oh, I'm on hiatus. And I go, what's that? Oh, our show, you know, we haven't gotten picked up yet for season 3. So while we wait for 2 months, I'm out of work. And I'm like, what? No, you worked so hard to get a job and now you're just at home for a month or two with no work. That's horrifying.
Well, that's also why they get paid so much, like, especially artists and designers and storyboard artists, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the scariest part is, like, when they call it a hiatus, but, like, they haven't got the green light for, like, season 3. So then you're just like, I hope we get one.
Yeah.
Like, because it might go two months. They're like, oh, we're still waiting to hear. Then it might stretch to 4 months. And it's like, oh, I hope you saved.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard like, that happening, intense. Too, where people, they don't renew the show, but they don't cancel the show. And then everyone leaves to go do stuff. And then months later, they're like, hey, the show's back. But then everybody's gone on other shows. So they have to restaff. Mm-hmm. So that's a crazy thing, too.
Yeah. What I really find interesting is, like, I've worked with people that are like, if, like, the show gets another season, I am going to leave and go back. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, personally, and, like, I'm still, like, young in the industry, but I would be freaking scared to say something like that.
Because
it's like, okay, well, I definitely would rather be on that show, but I'll work with you until that show starts. It's like, okay, well, I don't think I want you on my show.
That's
what I would assume.
That's
but
like telling somebody, I like you. I'm going to go out with you. But if I see somebody hotter than you, I'm going to dump you
or
and
go back to my ex.
I'm going to go back to my ex because they just call us like, wait, what?
I know.
Pass.
I think, so, of course, I'm in production right now. Mm-hmm. But I think because this person was a storyboard artist and I think talent, people are willing to make those like accommodations. But I find that really interesting and a nice place to be. And not everyone gets to be in that place where they get to make a choice.
I feel like you have to earn that type of choice.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that sounds like the kind of thing where you get to the level where you are so cool to work with and your work is so stellar that, of course, we'll make that exception for you. But I mean, I don't know anyone who's ever done that, but I get the sense that you have to be pretty awesome.
He is pretty
if you're awesome.
Awesome
then yeah. If you're kind of awesome, mediocre, it's like, why do you hold back on that for a year or two and kind of wait?
Yeah. I think that's the goal now. I want to be so awesome that I can have boundaries. And
you should have boundaries beforehand.
No, you should. But sometimes you can't. You're like, I'm going to leave after 8 hours of working, okay? Thank you. Bye. But it's like, oh, this thing came in right when you're packing up. It's like, can you please do it? It has to go overseas right now. And it's like, okay. Because you also want to be like, because I always want to be a Band-Aid for my production. But like, and fill those voids where something's like, oh, this really has to go, but everyone else is gone. But I also want to have boundaries so I can spend time with my husband and obviously work on this podcast. And that kind of stuff is tough.
I'm a big advocate of boundaries.
Yeah.
I think boundaries are amazing, and I wish more people had them, particularly artists, because we are a very beautiful, delicate, sensitive snowflake. And I really wish that we were just made out of Teflon instead of snowflake material because But that's its own. I'll get into that later. That's its own. Oh, yeah.
I definitely want to cover that.
Oh, we will. We will. Okay. But no, but I mean, but you learn a lot of stuff if you just work a lot of random jobs. But it also makes you tough. Mm-hmm. It really does. I mean, it's not necessarily the path that you would have chosen for yourself to have this story of, I got this battle scar doing this and this battle scar doing this. But it makes you tough on the inside. And you know that, you know what? If this doesn't pan out for a while, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to starve. I'm not going to lose my rent. I'm not going to lose my apartment, you know, or if you have pets or children or whatnot, no, we will continue on. And that's a good feeling to know in your mind, I will be okay, even if everything around me is very much not okay. And you don't get that when things go well. You get that when you've gone through things that are bad. So, not that I want anyone to go through hard times, but hard times is when you figure out what you're actually capable of. You don't learn as much when everything is great.
So that's the first part of my interview with Angela Ensminger. Be sure to check in with us in 2 weeks and hear part two. Thank you so much. You can check out Angela on the web. She's on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook at Sketchy Soul. And her podcast, The Animated Journey, is on iTunes and can be found on theanimatedjourney.com. Want to chat? We're on Twitter at Ink, the letter N, Paint Girls, on Facebook at Ink and Paint Girls Podcast, or email us at inkandpaintgirlspodcast@gmail.com. The Ink and Paint Girls podcast is brought to you by me, creator and host Cassie Soliday, and produced by Val Patrone in sunny Burbank, California. Music composed by TV's Kyle and Grace Tsai. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Girls podcast. Thanks for tuning in.